And speaking of rarities, we didn't talk about this, but were there recordings on cylinder even before 78? Were there any preachers that are archived on cylinder that we could find?
Yes, this would be, in my opinion, this would be a wonderful research project because so much of the energy about religious broadcasting.
Listening to Zach Poff's Pond Station, available at wavefarm.org/listen. If you click on the listen button on any WGXC.org page, you can hear the sounds from the bottom of one of the wave farm ponds, thanks to the hydrophones Zach Poff has put there. The radio artist is surveilling the underwater sounds in Greene County, and you can go to wavefarm.org/listen or click on any WGXC.org page and click on the listen button to listen to transmissions from inside a wave farm pond from morning until sundown from Zach Poff's Pond Station. Tune into all sorts of live radio shows every Sunday on WGXC 90.7 FM, beginning at 8 a.m., where the Reverend Kim Singletary is live with There's a Bright Side Somewhere from Columbia County, every Sunday at 8 a.m. Then at 9 a.m., Janessa Hope McKay brings you a slap of reality live from the WGXC studio in Hudson in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. She's playing her top music picks and talking about her hot topics of the week until 11 a.m. At 1 p.m., every Sunday, DJ Neva Wartell is live with music for the masses from Catskill, with sounds from around the world. At 4 p.m. every Sunday, Carlene Murphy and Azuka Legba are live with the Lile Latan version of the WGXC Afternoon Show until 6 p.m. And every Sunday night, Tony Fallon is live with the Irish Show at 8 p.m. on the radio from Acre on 90.7 WGXC.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM, listener-aided and abetted radio.
This is Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC COVID update for the weekend. While COVID-19 deaths continue throughout the area, new case numbers are falling in the Hudson Valley now, as the Omicron variant of COVID-19 seems to have peaked. Columbia County, for instance, went from 178 cases on January 18th to 121 on January 20th and 75 on January 21st, with one new death this past week. In Greene County, new cases fell to 64 on January 20th after many days above 100. Meanwhile, Ulster County reported another death, and Dutchess County reported two more fatalities. But new case numbers in Dutchess County fell by more than 300, and Ulster County officials reported 7,150 cases on January 21st, down from 7,465 cases reported on January 20th, and down from an all-time high of 7,569 cases reported for January 15th. Dutchess County, meanwhile, reported 2,105 active cases on January 19th, down 313 from 2,418 active cases reported January 18th, and well below the 8,510 all-time high reported on January 8th. Go to the WGXC newsroom for more information on COVID-19 and many other local stories.
Global wealth inequality is fueling the pandemic and killing millions. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Oxfam reported this week that the world's 10 richest men saw their wealth double during the pandemic, from $700 billion to $1.5 trillion, while the incomes of 99% of the world's population dropped. Oxfam declared, "Widening economic, gender, and racial inequalities, as well as the inequality that exists between countries, are tearing our world apart," unquote. Meanwhile, for the second year in a row, the World Economic Forum's Davos conference is being held virtually due to the pandemic. Billionaires and millionaires are traditionally invited to Davos to offer insights into the problems of the day, from catastrophic climate change to COVID-19. Beyond this virtual sanctum, in the real world, Oxfam notes, inequality is killing one person every 4 seconds. Wealth inequality plagues the United States as well.
That there must be a moral shift in this country, that there must be a change in power. As Dr. King said, the real problem that we've always had with these issues of voting is the fear of the aristocracy, of the masses of poor and low wealth people, black and white, coming together to vote in a way that fundamentally shifts the economic architecture of the nation.
That's Bishop William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour the day after the holiday marking Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday.
In fact, in 1967, Dr. King said, we must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
Bishop Barber has been building on King's legacy for years and says the path to progressive change lies in organizing poor and low-wealth people. Barber juxtaposes the swift passage of corporate-friendly COVID-19 relief bills with the recent failure to pass the Build Back Better and voting rights legislation.
That when it came to the corporations, they get they got everything they asked for. They wanted $4-5 trillion, they got $4-5 trillion. Billionaires made $2 trillion in the first 20 months of COVID and are growing. When it comes to issues like poverty and voting rights, number one, we bifurcate them in a way that the forces of oppression never bifurcate them. And then we keep compromising down, 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 rather than fighting. And eventually, if we're not careful, it would be tantamount to Frederick Douglass accepting a long weekend as an answer to slavery rather than emancipation and freedom.
The COVID-19 pandemic has amplified inequality on a global scale. Most wealthy nations have vaccinated more than 70% of their populations, while in many poor countries, especially in Africa, the vaccination rates are still below 10%. The World Health Organization says on its website, quote, the global failure to share vaccines equitably is taking its toll on some of the world's poorest and most vulnerable people. New variants of concern mean that the risks of infection have increased in all countries for people who are not yet protected by vaccination, they write. New aggressive virus variants could appear that don't respect borders. While anyone remains at risk of COVID-19, we all remain at risk. Public Citizen released a detailed report last May on how 8 billion mRNA vaccine doses could be produced in 1 year for an estimated $23 billion, provided the patent holders like Pfizer and Moderna cooperate. Public Citizen calls the Moderna vaccine the NIH Moderna vaccine, stressing the massive investment of public funds and the key role the National Institutes of Health scientists played in developing that life-saving vaccine. Vaccine profits have minted at least 9 new billionaires at Moderna BioNTech and China's CanSino, amassing combined new wealth of over $19 billion, this according to the People's Vaccine Alliance. Other billionaires who invested in these corporations raked in an additional $32 billion as well. Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna, that is, NIH Moderna, are making $1,000 per second, according to Oxfam, while billions remain unvaccinated or only partially vaccinated. All the World Economic Forum's Davos panels and the combined philanthropy of the world's more than 2,755 billionaires have failed so far to vaccinate the world's poor. That's why a broad global coalition has formed calling for the world's governments to tax the rich. It's time to levy a wealth tax on the world's multimillionaires and billionaires. So writes Chuck Collins of the Institute for Policy Studies and the Fight Inequality Alliance, introducing their Taxing Extreme Wealth report. He goes on, quote, this is not to simply raise revenue to vaccinate the world and invest in robust public health systems, but a wealth tax that is intended to save democracy from the extreme concentrations of wealth and power, unquote. A graduated wealth tax on people with $5 million or more would raise $2.5 trillion annually, the report calculates. Those funds could pay to contain this pandemic, invest in public health to prevent the next one, and lift millions out of poverty. Tax the rich. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
I'm Tom Rowe with WGXC in Acre with this week's WGXC Congressional Report.
tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 19th and 20th congressional seats in New York. Current Democratic Representatives Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko vote with the positions of President Joe Biden 100% of the time, according to the 538.com website.
So far, at least five candidates have announced they want to replace Representative Paul Tonko in whatever ends up being the 20th congressional district. Right now, that includes all of Albany County and much of the Capital District, but redistricting may not be resolved for weeks, so speculation on an election without a defined district is difficult. But so far, Jack Fallon Underwood, Justin Chairs, Cole Matthews, and Ross Tlaib Rah are running in the Democratic primary election June 28th. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Tonko wants the lines drawn, too. Tonko said, and I quote, "I just hope we're given district lines as soon as possible because the petitioning date is just around the corner. I'd like to know what my district is going to look like and if it's divided where I'm going to go from that point on," end quote. Democrats now control redistricting in the legislature, and the article asked, and I quote, "Will Democrats try to make life more difficult for Elise Stefanik or make reelection easier for Antonio Delgado?" End quote. Tonko's blue district, which lies between Stefanik's now red district on the north and Delgado's purple district on the south, will be altered if Democrats attempt to help one or the other of the nearby swing districts. New York Democratic Party Chairman Jay Jacobs said, and I quote, "Republicans across the country are redrawing congressional lines to favor their candidates. Without being obnoxious in New York, if lines are drawn with communities and help Democrats, then that is the course we should take," end quote. Republican Liz Joy lost to Tonko in 2020 and is also running again this year.
This week, WGXC interviewed Jack Fallon Underwood, who is among the candidates challenging Tonko in the 20th Congressional District Democratic primary in June. Here's an excerpt of that interview.
Why I'm running is just after, I think in a previous interview I said it was the January 6th insurrection, but that just kind of strengthened my resolve. Prior to that, I had just seen so much division in this country. Throughout the Trump presidency, it seemed like two sides were moving away and refusing to listen to each other. I think just now Trump's pulled out of the presidential debate in 2024. So the signs look like the country is schisming. I am running on a simple platform. I only want to campaign on two bills. Instead of listing a bunch of promises that don't happen or I can't accomplish, I will either pass the bipartisan majority bill and the anti-corruption bill. And if they don't pass, I'll step down. I won't run again. It's as simple as that.
Mid-Hudson News Network is reporting U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado touted his congressional record during a teletown hall on January 18. In the 3 years that Delgado has been in office, he has had 18 of his bills passed and signed into law. The Rhinebeck Democrat told everyone on the telephone town hall session that each of those measures was for the benefit of his constituents in New York's 19th congressional district. Delgado said of the 18 bills signed into law, 10 were under President Trump and 8 during the first year of the Biden administration. He said, and I quote, "From addressing the needs of our farmers to supporting our veterans to empowering our small businesses to protecting against toxins like PFOS, the focus is always on delivering for communities," end quote. Delgado was joined on the call by Ulster County Health Commissioner Dr. Carol Smith to address the latest concerns about the pandemic. Other topics addressed during the one-hour session included supporting the workforce and protecting voting rights. Delgado is being challenged by the current Dutchess County Executive, Republican Mark Molinaro. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Here is an excerpt of Delgado's town hall meeting from January 18th with a constituent asking about a senior issue.
Mary from Ulster.
Hi. How come the seniors didn't get any kind of stimulus like the people from unemployment and child tax credits? Seniors got a got an increase of 5.9, while there's inflation is 6.2, and so we're still behind. I'm fortunate that I'm still working, but every time I go to the grocery store, the prices are up. So the seniors are still behind.
Yes, Mary, thank you so much for your question, and certainly appreciate your concerns regarding rising prices. It's a real challenge for the country right now, and certainly an issue that we have to get our arms wrapped around. I want to take your question in two ways. I do want to say on the question of receiving economic impact payments, seniors did receive these payments, and you know, if for some reason you did not receive one, then I would encourage you to reach out to our office, and we can figure out why that might have been the case. But it is my understanding that seniors did receive economic impact payments. That being said, and I think your point is well taken, more needs to be done, particularly when you factor in the rising costs of goods and services. We are being hit pretty hard in that regard, whether it's, you know, like I said in my remarks, at the gas pump, or whether it's at the grocery store, or whether it's prescription drugs, you name it. We're seeing a real hit in the pockets of a lot of folks. And that's why I've taken a number of steps. And that's why I talked about my four plan in terms of how we can do more to address these issues, and focusing on a host of areas, whether it's making sure that I called on the president to approve fuel sales from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which the president ultimately did do, which I think was positive effect on the prices at the pump. We are starting to see some signs that crude oil and gas prices are stabilizing. You know, also just thinking about what we can do through the infrastructure bill that we signed into law. One of the challenges that we're facing is how we bring goods to the market faster. Well, one way that can help is if we have robust broadband, if we have roads that are not in disrepair, if we have ports that are able to take goods off carriers in a timely and efficient fashion, if we have a system that would make it so that when our foreign trading partners unload their carriers, they are required to some degree to take back our exports, as is not the case currently. So there are things that we can do specifically that I have done by way of supporting legislation to meet these needs. And I think also just figuring out how we can invest in American manufacturing. I think we've got to do more to create more investment in American-made goods, which means that we have to use American-made materials when we are investing in our infrastructure. And to that end, I've introduced legislation to make sure that we achieve that by making sure that when federal agencies seek waivers to not use to avoid American laws on our books, they have to disclose that publicly on a website so we understand exactly why and what the rationale for that is. Lastly, I'll just note this, because I think, you know, as a senior, you know, I think might have some concern in this regard. You know, I've put together a letter to make sure that we do all we can to lower Medicare premiums. Medicare announced in November that Medicare Part B premium rates for 2022 were going to increase by $21. This 14.5% increase is the largest Part B premium increase in the history of Medicare, and this is simply unacceptable. Unacceptable for seniors, particularly living on a fixed income. In December, I sent a letter to the Department of Health and Human Services urging them to take action to lower Medicare Part B premiums for seniors, and I'm glad to say that after our letter, Medicare is taking another look at these premium increases, and we will continue to stay on top of this issue moving forward. So thank you very much for the call, Mary, and certainly we'll keep doing all we can to bring down costs.
Health experts are warning the public about the mental, social, and physical health risks of using digital devices too much, including the possible damaging effects of blue light exposure for kids and adults in New York who are working and learning remotely. Scott Edmonds is Chief Eye Care Officer at UnitedHealthcare. He says blue light is a low-wavelength, high-energy light that can boost a person's alertness. But doctors and researchers are concerned about the effects it can have over time.
Research shows it's toxic to the retina. It causes the retina to change its metabolism and over the long term could lead to retinal damage.
Experts say the best ways to reduce blue light impact is to keep screens at least 30 inches away from your eyes and to use a blue light filter or glasses. Another recommendation is the 20-20-20 rule. After 20 minutes of computer work, take 20 seconds to look at something that's 20 feet away. Studies regarding the dangers of too much screen time find other side effects, including poor mental health and not enough physical activity. Alana Lowry with Common Sense Media, a nonprofit that reviews online materials designed for kids, stresses the need for children to develop one-on-one social skills.
When you can learn to be a critical thinker from a very young age, that sticks with you. You can't always do that when you're just watching TikTok challenges and stuff like that. When you have FaceTime with people, you learn how to be social. You learn how to interact.
Larry says it's important that parents who want their kids to cut down on screen time set a good example.
It's critical, really, for families to think about how they use media as a family. And I think it's really important for parents or caregivers to model the behavior that they want their kids to have.
I'm Michaela Savitt for New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And now here is your WGXE weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, sunny with a high near 21 degrees, with wind chill values as low as minus 11 degrees. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 12 degrees. And on Sunday, mostly cloudy with a high near 28 degrees. And Sunday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 6 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, Radio for Open Ears in Greene and Columbia Counties.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXE sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXE.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Taylor.
What do you want? Turn on the radio.
I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you.
You're being grotesque.
The radio, remember? Make it work.
Radio. It tends to induce.
Got time. Slow down. Now it's pretty late.
Why don't you switch on the radio?
I refuse to discuss it any further.
Oh, please, you must.
Please don't treat me like a mental patient.
Do you believe that? Not for a second. Do you realize what this means?
Don't look for it, Taylor.
That's the radio.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
And suddenly...
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
It's
to you, back to you. Dancing winds are strong, but they're not strong enough. Belinda, dancing winds are strong, but they're not strong enough.
Hello? That was Tim Hecker with the song I'm Transmitting Tonight from his 2017 album Radio Amor.
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The book of Revelations tells us to watch for the seven signs of evil.
Wait, sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
Next, we'll hear Lost Signals and Drifting Satellites from Annie Gosfield, which incorporates satellite sounds, static, machine noise, microtonality, and includes cellist Joan Jean-Renaud and the New York-based Flux String Quartet.
Thank you.
That was Annie Gosfield's Lost Signals and Drifting Satellites.
India, Alpha, Mike, Delta, Echo, Alpha, Delta. India, Alpha, Mike, Delta, Echo, Alpha.
Hey, Mike.
That was radio artist Gregory Whitehead with the track India Alpha Mike from 2014.
World crashes in into my living room. Television made me what I am.
Television down, but we are just good friends.